This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we stream on YouTube as well at the Team 980, where you see Mark Ein is with us, the chairman and CEO of the Mubadala City Open, coming back to D.C. this July. Of course, he is also a partner with the Washington Commanders. We'll talk about a little bit of both. But Mark, welcome to the show. Great to see you.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's do the Commander stuff off the top. And then I am a huge tennis fan, so I'm very excited to talk tennis. Obviously, most people in the audience know you probably. They know the City Open. It's been a DC institution for a long time, but we're very Commanders heavy show. I just want to ask you, like, very broadly, when you got into this with Josh, who you've known since elementary school, and you see the totality of what you guys have done here in a couple years, not just on the field, but you're lobbying the federal government. You're involved in DC City Council. You're hiring executives, you're hiring coaches, you're doing construction. There's so many facets to what your group is doing. Did you have an idea that this was going to be as involved as it has been? Or has this been bigger for, like, you probably knew it was a big bite, but maybe a larger mouthful than you bargained for?
No, I think the mission here was, we know how beloved this franchise was, how much the team meant to people, families, companies, jurisdictions. Like, we knew what this meant. And, you know, I've been here for the last 30 plus years. So I've lived through, you know, sort of the decline and the irrelevance. And you know, Josh grew up here and, you know, and stays close to it. And, you know, Mitch is here. And so we understood what it was a long time ago, what it was when we got there, but also what it can't, could, and should be. We also knew it wasn't going to be easy. We knew all of these things. We knew it was a rebuild on the football side, the business side, the stadium side. Like, we knew it, but that's honestly what we all love to do. Like, that's what we spend our lives doing. We love building things, all of us. I mean, look at the companies that Josh has built, you know, Apollo and the portfolio companies. Mitch has built Danaher. Look at the stuff I've built, and you've seen the turnaround in the tennis tournament. Like, this is our passion. It's what gives us energy. And so I don't think we underestimated what it would be. I think what's been so rewarding is just how quickly fans have embraced the team again. And, you know, when I go around town, the amount of people who stop me just to say thanks, and it's like you're giving them back something that they treasured and they had lost. And that is so gratifying. It makes all the hard work really, really worthwhile.
You know, Mark, that answer actually doesn't really surprise me at all, because it felt like as you all came in, you realized the gargantuan nature of this task, how multifaceted it is, and seemed to have a plan of attack that's allowed you to operate at the speed you have. So this is probably something we could do like an hour podcast on, but I'll just ask you one question and then we'll get to the tennis tournament. But like, when you take over, you know, an asset, a company, or you think about building something, like, how do you... like, what's the first thing on the to-do list to understand how to build to ensure that you can get to step two and step three and step four as you go?
Yeah, there's really two things. The first thing is, what's our mission? What do we stand for? So like, what is it that this is all about? And what do we stand for? What are your values? What's the mission? What are the values? And we literally did that before we closed. And all of us, Josh does that with all of his companies, Mitch lives by that in his, and I live by it in ours. And so, and then you get alignment. Does everyone agree? So then you sort of have the mission and the values you're going to stand for. And then you just have to make sure you have people who are there, who are aligned and buy into that, and that every decision you make is guided by them. Where organizations get off is you put those there, but then there's a short-term gain that goes against your value and you do it, and then the whole thing crumbles. So mission and values. And then the second thing is leadership. Do you have the right people in leadership? And when people, you know, look, we're all excited after last year and the potential of what could happen on the field this year. What I'm most excited about truly is the leadership of this organization. When you look at Adam Peters as GM, Dan Quinn voted best coach by the NFLPA, an incredible culture coach. Then the people they've been able to attract under them, which is incredible. The number of those people who got offered the big job, GM jobs, head coaching jobs, who said, no, I'm going to stay here because I want to be part of it. That speaks volumes. And now on the business side, we have Mark Klaus, who's an extraordinary CEO, an extraordinary brand builder. It's like he didn't come from sports. We interviewed him in sports. We're like, this is the right guy because he's a culture guy and he's a brand guy and he's a leader. And so when I think not just this year, but I look in the next 10 years, we have a mission we're all agreeing on. We have a set of values we've all bought into. And then we have this incredible leadership team now also supported by the people under them. Like, you can't predict what's going to happen, but you've kind of laid the foundation for hopefully a lot of good things over a long time.
Mark Guyne, the CEO and chairman of the Mubadala City Open with us here on the Hoffman Show, of course, limited partner with the Commanders as well. So you talk about the tennis tournament, flipping that. You took over as chairman in 2019. What'd you inherit and what do you think it is now as you embark on this summer where you have seven top 10, either a WTA or ATP players coming to play already in DC with potentially more getting added to that list closer to?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of similarities. The tennis tournament, we took it over. It's the only ATP 500 on tour. It's the fifth biggest tennis tournament in the United States. I was a ball kid when I was a little kid. The two things I cared most about as a little kid growing up in Chevy Chase, going to Rollingwood Elementary School with Josh and Leland Junior High and BCC was the tennis tournament where I was a ball kid and the football game where I'd go with my dad. Like, those were the two things that meant the most to me. And so this tennis tournament, as I was an adult and I would go, it's like the tennis is great, but the experience is not what it needs to be. And so when we took over, we were very ambitious and very quick in making changes. Like, before we took over, there was nowhere indoor or air conditioning to go unless you were in the VIP tent. And like, it's July in the middle of DC. The food was the Park Service food. It was not. And so we took it over with only 4 months, but came in and built new facilities, brought in new food, and we've kept building on that. And so now there's these great venues, indoor places, tequila bars, wine bars, like all this stuff, and 4 Michelin star chefs, best of DC food and wine. And so what happened is when we took it over, 20% of the tickets were full tournament tickets and 80% people bought it by the day. We're now almost, just 5 years later, we're almost opposite that. It's 75% people committing the whole tournament. And what happened is people are like, I'm not just coming once. I'm coming every day because I can have great food, have great drinks, bring my other friends. I'm so close to the players. And so we've sold every ticket for the last 4.5 years. This year, 100% will happen. That's never going to change. And it's all the result of these investments. And then you talk about the players. We also had to really invest in the player facility. So we built this fantastic compound on site with amazing food. We literally, especially European players, coffee is the thing that matters the most to them. So we fly America's best barista in every year from Michigan to serve. And the players like that kind of touch, they love. We have great gyms there. And then we put them up at an incredible hotel. You know, it costs us more than other places. But literally, I was talking to one of the players' agents who came yesterday, and he said, you know, the way you treat the players, the quality of their hotels, and everything they do when they experience in DC is why so many players now want to be here. This is really great.
All right. I have so many follow-ups. First of all, how do you get named America's best barista? How has this guy hung on to his title so long? And I need to know more about the barista, Mark.
Yeah. Well, you can interview him on site this year. I don't know what award he won, but he did win that award, and we pay a lot to have him come and make our players happy.
Whatever it is, he's working. That's good. DC's food scene is amazing. I love, you know, the fact that you can get some of the best cuisine of any kind in the world in this city. So why was that something that you focused on to tap into that part of DC's culture? And, you know, how did that process go of recruiting these chefs to come together to the same thing? Because I could imagine I mean, the food scene is incredibly competitive. Someone might be like, no, I'll go, but not if he's coming or she's coming.
Yeah.
So how did you get, you know, the collaborative nature to build this environment that you have?
So look, I love food too, like you. And the thing that drives me crazy is if I go to a sporting event and I can't eat the food and I've got to eat before, after. And the thing about a tennis tournament is it's not just 1 2-hour match. If you can go stay 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. But what happened there is that you couldn't eat the food. So you'd come for the match and you'd leave. And it's like, if we can create the venues, the food, the drinks, that experience and curate something special with a lot of variety, it's people will come, they'll stay for 6 or 7 hours, and they'll come day in and day out. And so that was the vision from the very beginning. And the very first thing we did, I got my friend Jose Andres, obviously a legend in town, and he came aboard. Yeah, unreal. But we got Duke's Grocery, like the best burger in DC. We have Dolcezza ice cream. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And then over time, it's like the players. Like, this tournament used to have to chase players to come play this tournament, and they would have to go chase them. Every player we announced today came to us and said, I want to come to DC. The chefs come to us. Restaurants come to us. We haven't announced all the new ones who are coming. Last 2 years, we've had 4 Michelin star chefs. So Jose, Innit Little Washington, Nicholas Stefanelli from Officina and Masseria. We had Albie there last year, and the Dabney. And we'll have something very similar this year. Plus, not just the high end, but also just the best of DC, everything. And I can't wait to tell people about the other ones who are new. And if you look, there's food stuff, there's Latteray macaroons and stuff. These are people calling us saying, how do I get a presence on this site? Because it's kind of a tennis tournament wrapped in a food and wine festival, and I want to be there. So it works great for everyone.
Well, if you want to announce any of the food people on our show and they want to, you know, bring a sample too, your show knows how to get in touch with my show, so to speak.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Rafidi is amazing at Albie and Yellow. And by the way, congrats to Jose on the Chef's Table episode that just came out, part of the Legend series. That was very, very fun to watch. More about his story. All right, last thing for you, Mark. On the players front, one of the guys who's coming back this year, DC's very own, Francis Tiafo. I know the relationship has been tight with him over the years, and obviously this is his hometown tournament. So how big of a role has Francis played over the years in being a part of this tournament as a player, just as a player, as someone who's risen through the ranks and been a high profile player, and then also as an ambassador for the city?
Yeah. I mean, it's just so fantastic to have Francis, someone of his passion and character and the light that he exudes, part of our city and part of it. I mean, another, like, just the way the world works, it's so small, is you know, people know this story that Francis's dad was the maintenance guy at the Junior Tennis Champion Center in College Park. Coincidentally, it was my mentor in life when I worked in New York who moved to DC and built that place. And so I've known Francis and his family since Francis was like 5 years old. And as years have gone on, we built a friendship. I try to mentor him in things outside of tennis. We talk all the time. So there's a personal connection, but then just what it means for our city when he shows up and is playing the night match there, it's so electric. And it's also where Francis shines. Like, he loves the biggest stages. And I know he said after winning a Grand Slam, winning DC would mean more to him than anything else. He really wants to get his name on the awning, and I hope he can do it one year. He's just like the perfect, his life story, how he carries himself, his spirit of generosity, how great he is around everyone during that week. It's one of the things that makes the tournament that so special.
He's going to have some stiff competition, which is great this year, including other top Americans, Tommy Paul, Taylor Fritz, amazing names on the women's side as well. Mark, this was so great to have you on the show. Hopefully we'll have you back soon, maybe even announcing some food. The Mubadala City Open is coming back to DC this July. Get your tickets now because they are almost sold out. Mark, thanks for your time, and we really appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I appreciate you. Thanks a lot. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Right now, every day, at 4 o'clock. We do a little thing called the Beltway Blitz. We'll tell you what's going on in the realm of DSC sports, things that you care about. Let's start on the diamond, please. My name is Spencer Nussbaum, covers the Nationals. That's why he's going to talk about the Nationals with us. Spencer, I know it's your buddy Andrew Golden penned the story, but I've got to ask you, do you think the team needs a guest lecturer about the Hobbit / Lord of the Rings trilogy? Do you think that'd be something they would want to recruit me for?
Well, you know, you'd have to put in a pretty compelling case. I think that's currently Trevor Williams' role. But yeah, no, it was a good story. And I think if you put together a compelling enough case, they might just listen to you because, you know, some of them, McKenzie, Soroka, they weren't so hot on the book. So, you know, you might be able to convince them.
Yeah, it's my dream scenario to have those guys like come to me for information and like ask questions about it because like I can't help them with anything. So that would be a huge deal for me.
Yeah. If you want to help them with their fastball shape, maybe look elsewhere.
Yeah, cannot help with that.
Spence, good weekend from the young outfielder stepping up, Robert Hassel III and Dalen Lyle. When Dylan Cruz and Jacob Young are back healthy, who is the odd man out, you think, in this Nats outfield?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question, right? I think probably at this point, I would have to think Dalen, just because he just was called up to AAA and then after a couple weeks went up to the majors. Again, it's going to be probably one of either Lyle or Hassel at that point. At the point that both of them come back, it could be tough. I think because Jacob Young hasn't hit all that well this season, yeah. I would be surprised to see him head down to Rochester, but it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world. I think just because, again, those other guys have more experience, you would really need Robert Hassel, Dalen Lyle to hit the cover off the ball and really play fantastic ball to stay up here when both of them are back. The thing is, we don't exactly have a timeline on when those two guys are exactly coming back. Mm. So it's a problem to not be able to push down the road a little bit.
Yeah, and there's no rush to do that now. But I'm thinking long term here down the road, Spencer. I think there's two distinct camps when it comes to James Wood. I think camp number one is whatever you have to do to keep him happy, healthy, and thriving in the middle of your order just to put up ridiculous numbers and just be the specimen that he is, you do that even if it means you might quote-unquote suffer a bit defensively with him in the outfield, a.k.a. you've got a couple better outfielders on the bench. To me, I'm far more open to the idea of saying, hey, what do you want? And might that include extending your career? Might that include you not having to run wind sprints in the outfield and track things and learning first base, which might be overkill to have an athlete of his caliber there, but long term, you got to do a little bit less, and you could focus on hitting nukes the way you do. Where are we in that kind of conversation? I'm sure they haven't necessarily broached playing first base with him, but it's as you said, it's kind of a good problem to have when you've got a bunch of talented players that just happen to play in the outfield.
Yeah, look, I hear you on that, and I definitely, the idea has been, you know, floated around and thought about, at least in the media circles. It's my personal belief that James still has the capability to be a maybe not top 10, but
a good one,
you know,
sure,
league
sure,
average yeah. left fielder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in that sense, I don't really see the value in moving him. Again, he's 22. Positional value-wise, if you can get that sort of offensive production out of an outfield spot rather than a first-base spot, generally I would take that. I think sometimes it looks a little awkward just because of how tall he is and, mm-hmm. you know, everything in that sense. But frankly, I think he's better than maybe some of the metrics and some of the eye tests let on. And personally, right now, I'd rather see him in left field than Alex Call, although I get they're kind of managing his workload a little bit. But long-term, I still see him as an outfielder for the next 6-7 years.
Spencer, there's been some good developments in the bullpen. That group obviously struggled mightily to start the year. The closer of that group, Kyle Finnegan, what is the latest on him and when we can see him toss it again?
Yeah, so Davey had said after the post game, I think it was Sunday, that, you know, we said the day before that Finnegan was 75 to 80%. He said it felt about 5% better throwing the other day. If it were me, I would still expect to see him out a day. But again, we'll find out more in a couple hours. I don't view it as a long-term thing. Again, imaging came back negative. So I really just think it is maybe surviving one or two more days with someone else in the ninth.
Spencer, thank you.
Thanks,
as always,
Spence.
Buddy. Talk soon.
You mentioned Finley, 106.7 The Fan, fired up to get on the Rude Guest Hotline and talk to our man, The Locker, Craig Lachlan. Locker, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. Getting ready, watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's been an exciting time, other than the Caps are out.
Yeah, they're out. But have you been impressed with the Panthers?
Yeah, dude. Florida's a wagon.
Yeah, Florida can really go. And Florida, the GM brought in some good pieces, you know, bringing in Marchand and guys like that, I think really pushed them over the top. They're very solid all around, and their goaltender is world-class, and Bobrovsky. They're going to be a tough out for whoever comes out of the West.
I mean, for sure. I almost don't want to think like this, but I'm curious. Obviously, the Caps kind of got, you know, kind of got run over by the Hurricanes. And then the Hurricanes kind of get run over by the Panthers. Is it too much extrapolation to wonder how far away the Caps are from like another cup run based on those results? Or is it a little more fluky different?
I think it's different. I think the Caps, as we all know, this season had an outstanding season. I think they, you know, during the course of the season, they won some big games. They went through some big stretches with everybody playing at the highest level. The Caps at the time this season had 7 or 8 guys that had career years, and that's hard to manufacture in any sport. And in the playoffs, to me, they were simply shut down by Carolina's speed and forecheck. They couldn't get out of their zone, so then you're not producing, you're not generating offense, you're spending too much time in your own zone, and your legs get fatigued, your mind gets fatigued. It's hard to play defense. You love to play offense in every sport as a player. And to me, they just ran out of gas. And the Hurricanes are a heck of a hockey team, but it also shows you some of their shortcomings watching what Florida did to them. I didn't think Carolina had enough grit and grime to their game to match with the Canucks and type of defense that Paul Maurice plays. They're a go-go team too, but they're also a team that has a tremendous amount of sandpaper in their game. Every stoppage of play, there's a face wash, there's a hit to the head, there's a push, there's a shove, they run into the goaltender. All the things that maybe had the Caps done some of that to Carolina, that might have slowed them down a little bit, and they just didn't have it in their tank after a long, grueling season that a lot of people, when you look at it, if you would have said at the start of the season the Caps would have been first in the East, I would be surprised if 1 out of 10 people would have told you that. So to me, the Caps had a great season, and they get through the first round, but they can't match Carolina's forecheck. That was the difference. Carolina is ferocious, but Florida, guys, is even tougher because of the crap they do after the whistle and in the corners and running into you. There's way more contact in Florida's game than what Carolina showed in the playoffs.
Can we get to the point and play that type of game?
I think we can. I think you're going to see some changes this season. I think you're going to see some forwards be moved out of town and some new forwards brought in. Again, the mandate here in Washington is to get younger, to get faster, and now you get somebody with some more grit coming in and things like that. I think that's going to play into the hands of the Caps. I don't think the Caps are out of the so-called Stanley Cup window, especially the way Ovi played. But again, guys, he's 40 years old. Can he duplicate what he did this year? That's another guy that had a career year. Can they put together 8 or 10 guys that have career seasons to push them over the top and get into the playoffs, number one? And number two, go long in the playoffs. To me, that's still up in the air, but I'm sure that, you know, Chris Patrick and company are working on ideas to make this team even better after seeing some of their shortcomings against Carolina.
Well, and I was really impressed last year by kind of, you know, they're in a tricky spot because they were trying to rebuild and give Ovi a chance at the record at the same time. And maybe rebuild's too strong of a term, but like, you know what I mean? They were trying to, they kind of had like competing agendas that they were able to merge, which was really hard to do. And I think some of these young dudes, Protas, Chychrun, like a lot of these dudes that'll only continue to get better, I think gives them a real chance at keeping the window alive with Ovi, you know? Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think, you know, there's never now, remember, guys, you can't say rebuild in Washington anymore. We're not in that mode. We want to continue to have a chance to win. And the mandate is let's spend to the cap. Let's get the best players. Let's put the best product on the ice and let's go for it. And that's what they did this past summer. It was amazing what they did in about a week in June to put this team into a playoff position, number one, to push them into the second round, number two, and to push them into this situation where they have a lot of good young players. Their stable is very good. So now they've got to make decisions on who they bring back. Are they going to bring back Beauvillier? Are they going to bring back Mangiapane? Are they going to bring back X, Y, and Z? To me, that's the $10 million question. How are they going to work through those type of things? Plus, they have some guys coming up on contract next year, like a Connor McMichael. He still, you know, he had a bridge deal, so now he's going to probably want big dollars after the season he had last year. So you've also got to work the cap. But the guys they brought in and signed long-term, like a Chychrun, like a Protas that still signed long-term because he jumped on the opportunity for a five-year deal, they probably got him at a steal after you saw that he was a 30-goal guy. Can they replicate that? That's my question. Can they get the same type of stellar goaltending? It's going to be a tough season next year. Everyone's going to have them marked down as one of the top teams in the league now. And how do you get over the hump next year just to get into the playoffs in a very parity-driven league like we have now in the NHL?
I mean, you are speaking the truth. And it also is difficult just because of the way the playoff scenarios are driven up that it looks like Caps would have to face Carolina again if they are to advance. We're talking with our friend Craig Lachlan here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can give the Locker a follow at Lachlan 18, L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N 18. Locker, I also wanted to ask you, I think you'll be biking to the beach that day, B, but I believe I'll be broadcasting from your golf tournament. I know it's coming up in a few weeks, June 20th at Norbeck Country Club. Just tell folks kind of what you get a lot of Caps guys, a lot of people together for a really good cause and what you hope to get done that day.
Yeah, it's one of two tournaments that we have for our foundation and rare cancers, and Norbeck has been a fantastic partner with us. When they came to me a couple of years ago with Al Koken's support, it was amazing to have another group of people to extend our golf tournament that we have in Crofton here in September to Norbeck. Norbeck is a fantastic course. We've never done it on a Friday, so it's a kickoff to a wonderful weekend. You get to work in the morning. It's a 1 o'clock start. We have pickleball. We'll have auctions. We have a lot of people coming. To me, it's a great course to get out and play, and we're so thrilled to be partnering with them once again to try to raise money for our cause. And to me, it's just great. I'm going to be able to get out there. I hope. I haven't golfed yet with my open heart surgery that I had, but they said I'm okay to golf now. So everybody on the other tees, look out for me because my balls may be coming that way. But we're gonna have a and I'm hoping you guys, I'm glad you're broadcasting for that tournament. We'd love to have you broadcast at our tournament on September 9th. I know it's in the middle of the NFL season, but man, we'd love to have you out here too.
I'd love to, Locker, but those Septembers get a lot trickier than the May and Junes.
I don't think we know if we're coming or going when September comes.
September 9th, I mean, they play in
I'll be riding the bike
Monday, your direction, Locker. You live that way going towards Annapolis, right?
Yes, right in it.
I'm going to be riding
from Annapolis.
I'm riding the bicycle from D.C. to Dewey Beach that day.
Wow.
July 20th. I mean, June 20th.
I know I see all your Instagram stuff. You are quite the cycler, man. I do the Peloton. I don't move from my basement. But I love the fact that you're doing that. Tell me when you're around here. I'll get out my car and see if I can find you.
Yeah, give me a ride. Okay, a couple miles.
Locker, I will not be riding a bike to the beach. I'll be hanging out at your tournament.
I know that's going to be great.
I did want to ask you on a personal level, obviously, you know, the last, I guess, 6 months-ish or so have been challenging for you. How are you feeling now? And what have you kind of learned about
By you.
Yourself. Yeah. Over this period where you've had some health struggles.
Well, it was a surprise, right? And Thanksgiving, right around Thanksgiving, when they said, hey, you need total heart surgery. It's like my doctor told me, he says, your heart now is ironclad. And I was like, okay, that sounds good to me. But I mean, the things I had to go through, I was so surprised. When you go in for a scan, I was healthy. And I'm just telling that to all the listeners out there.
Get
Make
checked.
Sure you get looked at, right?
Yep.
Make sure you get checked out. I had a scan, so now it's my aorta, it's my valve, it's my bypass that I needed, all these things. But it was getting through all that, and I knew there would be road bumps along the way, right? I had a problem with my lung, so I had to recover from that. I wasn't breathing very good with my left lung after surgery. It's just one of the things that can happen during surgery with a collapsed lung, so I had to battle through that. Then I get through that and I'm battling again. I was just actually, and thanks for asking, I was just in the hospital last week because they said I had a blood disorder and a blood infection. And I'm like, how is this happening to me? So I had to battle through that and I'm still battling through that. And to be perfectly honest, I had to have a PICC line put in last week. It's in my left bicep, and I have to have antibiotics every morning that my wife administers for me. She's the best nurse in the world, and she administers that every day, and I have to do that for a six-week span, so I can't really do a lot of the things I like to do. But I told them, when I went in, I said, listen to me, I'm a big tennis guy, I want to golf, put that darn thing in my left arm. So they put it in my left arm, so I'm allowed to play tennis. I'm allowed to work
out. Your priorities, huh?
Yeah, priorities. I'm allowed to work out. I get on the Peloton every day. I still have heart rehab for another 3 to 4 weeks, which is three times a week, where they push you aerobically and cardiovascularly at a clinic in Annapolis. So I still have to do all that. But it just makes you look at life in a little different perspective, that you've got to take advantage of every day you're given and sure. Make sure you fulfill it. And that's what I'm doing. I'm enjoying battling through this. I'm going to get through this PICC line thing. It comes out July 1st. That's my next date. It's just like when I came back from heart surgery. My date was to come back for the Caps on that Sunday against Buffalo, and I made that date. And then my other date was to return for Ovechkin, score an 895, which I was able to do. So I've hit my sort of plan. And B. Mitch knows this well, that as an athlete, you go in and you set goals for yourself after you're injured, and you do whatever it takes to reach those goals. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of in that mode now, that I want this PICC line out. I want to get back to my total life, taking cold plunges and saunas and all the things that I can't do now with my PICC line, having a few more IPAs than I do right now, and having some fun. And I'm not saying that, JP, you weren't an athlete, but I was just talking
was not.
About B.
That's
Mitch
fine.
And I. That's
well,
all.
I get it.
He played guard and tackle. I'm
not
guard that water tackle. Anybody got close?
not offended whatsoever. We're just happy you're on the right side of this thing
exactly.
And moving forward. And, you know, B and I say this all the time, both the radio coverage here on The Fan with John Walton and the television coverage with you and Joe B and Smoke and Alan and Alexa, we are very lucky. And I think people sleep on the level of hockey fan Brian and I are
mm-hmm.
because we watch all of it and love the sport. And we're very lucky to have the coverage we get of the Caps.
There you go.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that. Really appreciate that.
All right, Locker. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Maybe B will ride his bike by. We'll find out.
Okay. All the best, fellas. Have
a
great weekend.
Thank
you. All right, man. See ya. Bye.
Craig Could Lachlan right joining there, us on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can give him a follow at Lachlan18. Really happy his.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. it feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Health, what is most important, is on the come up.
Yeah. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980. You can find me on Twitter at The Denton Day. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, go ahead and do that. You see this program live 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Monday through Friday. Then you get Craig Hoffman 4 to 7. You get some Denton's Office mixed in between there as well. You know that this is the program that loves itself some college football. Myself and Kevin each love it. I know Max is a college football guy as well. So let's talk some college football. Shehan J. Araja from CBS Sports is kind enough to give us a few moments here on a Thursday. Shehan, always good to catch up, my friend. It has been a busy and hectic offseason, I'm sure, to put it lightly, but how are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I appreciate you having me back on.
So let's talk about the biggest news, at least so far, of the offseason, the adjustment to the seeding in the college football playoff. It felt like it was going to happen eventually. We just didn't know when. What do you think of straight seeding the 12 teams?
Yeah, I think it's probably the right decision. And look, I was somebody who was as vocal as anybody about the fact that I wanted to make sure that there were real serious rewards for conference championships. And certainly that was the case last year. I'd argue that we had the best conference championship weekend that we've had in a very long time. But I do think at the same time, once we actually got into the playoff, it was kind of obvious. We had an unbalanced bracket. Of course, the teams 5 through 8 all beat the teams 1 through 4. They obviously were also rewarded with home playoff games that the conference champions were not. So I do think that ultimately it does make sense to move to a straight seeding model. Last year, of course, the top four teams would have all been from the Big Ten and the SEC, but I do think that it was a little bit of an anomalous year from that perspective. I mean, I look even into 2025, I expect Clemson to be in that conversation. I think Miami could easily get into that conversation. Maybe you have a Big 12 team jump up, but I do think that ultimately it's the right decision, and it'll make for the most, not just the best product possible, but I think also the fairest bracket possible.
Do you think this decision was done more for some of the things that you just relayed, or was it done more for some of the things that the Boise State athletic director relayed on Twitter, which is just to punish the small guy?
Yeah, I mean, and it's a great question, right? I mean, I think that it's a combination of the two. I mean, look, the reality is we had the first round of playoff games over the course of 2 days, and many of them, of course, were up against NFL games. And very few of them ended up being competitive. And so I do think that, like, that's, I think, part of it. I mean, one of the things that I think could be a benefit is, like, I think if we had done straight seeding last year, we would have gotten, like, a Boise State-Indiana playoff game, which would have been a great opportunity to showcase both those programs in a game that obviously both of them would have had the chance to win. And so I think that that's part of it. I think that, again, like, just the fact that the bracket was so unbalanced. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the seeding, I mean, there were teams that definitely were a little more excited about being the 5 seed than the possibility of being the 1 seed. And obviously, that ended up being worst case scenario with the 1 seed Oregon having to play Ohio State, who went on to win the national title. But I do think that people felt kind of the disconnect between the top of the bracket, middle of the bracket, and lower part of the bracket. And again, we'll see how it looks in 2015, but I think that it's probably going to project as something that makes a little more sense.
Do you feel like that some of the changes that are happening a little too fast?
Well, I think that the thing that is unfortunate is just how reactionary all of this is. And some of this was always going to happen. And what I mean by that is, you know, I mean, this contract that the College Football Playoff had, it only existed for 2 more years when they did make the change to an expanded playoff. And so, you know, it means that max, we were going to get 2 years of an unchanged system before we had to enter into a brand new contract starting with the 2026 playoff. But, you know, I think it's interesting, right? Because what if Arizona State gets a fourth down stop and all of a sudden the 4 seed beat the 5 seed and they were obviously rewarded and proved that they deserved to be there? And I think that, frankly, Boise State and Arizona State proved that they deserved to be in that conversation for a top 4 seed as well. So, no, I do think that we are being very reactionary right now. I will also say I think that that's going to be a relatively short-term thing, because in 2026 we're going to have a new playoff contract that's going to extend a couple of years. And so I don't expect as many changes in that short run. The reality is with some of the, 24, 25 changes is that it's also part of negotiating for 2026 and beyond, you know, giving in maybe in some areas to compensate in other areas. So I do think that this is a temporary state of being, but I really do hope, like you kind of mentioned, that we don't just end up in this reactionary doom spiral every single year where we're trying to adjust for tiny things that really aren't that big a deal.
Shehan Jeyaraja, my guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show, with Dente sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. We got SEC meetings going on in Florida, and you mentioned the idea of a negotiating process coming up in the near future. Will that be a negotiation, or is that just going to be Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti telling everybody else what's going to happen?
I mean, it's essentially like been explicitly stated as that. You know, they had essentially a memorandum that they sent out last year where they said, you know, essentially the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be the ones who decide what we do moving forward. Now, I think that what's always interesting about power struggles and about monopolies is, you know, they aren't necessarily the best thing long term for the quality of your product, because, you know, again, like if you're in a situation, let's just use, for example, the 4 auto bids as a proxy for this. Like, you're in a situation where all of a sudden people aren't really following the playoff race, because why does it actually matter if so many teams are already guaranteed to be in? Why does a conference championship race matter? Why does a late season, group kind of matter? And so I do think that some of this stuff and some of this power will end up not maybe being as valuable long-term as these conferences want it to be. And again, look, here's the reality, right? Like, I think that, you know, back in 2023, Florida State is an undefeated conference champion, miss it. Like, I think people rightfully felt pretty bad about that. I don't think anybody should feel even a little bit bad about Alabama ending up as the first team out as a three-loss team with losses to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, who both would not have made bowl games if they didn't beat Alabama. And so, you know, I think that some of these exes are going to fall on deaf ears, and even on the auto bid situation, right? Like, I think that last year that was proposed, and it was largely shot down because of backlash from fans and media and partners. And so I think that they're at real risk of overplaying some of their hands. And so it'll be kind of interesting to see in the next couple of weeks and months, I guess, ultimately, like, you know, to make a comparison, right? It's the dog catching the car. It's a, hey, you have all the power and influence that you ever wanted. Do you actually even know what you want to do with this?
You know, I'm looking at some of the stuff that we have seen from SEC media days, and whether he wants to be or not, whether he should be or not, it does feel like Lane Kiffin is somewhat influential, or at least has enough of a voice to make people care about some of the things he said. And it seems like Shahan, over the course of the last couple of days, he's reunited with the love of his life. Good for him. He's reunited with sworn enemy Paul Feinbaum, and he is leading the charge for no auto bids, or at least he's been very vocal about no auto bids, no auto qualifiers. Do you think we're more likely in 2026 to get 12 teams with no auto bids, or have the playoff expand to 16 teams?
Well, I think that those two things aren't necessarily tied. I think that we are very likely to move to 16 teams regardless of what the system looks like. And one reason for that actually is, I think last year, right, we have the auto bids, and then on top of that, we have the buys. And all four teams that had buys ended up losing. And the other part of that, too, is that none of the four teams that got buys got the benefit of a home playoff game. And those ended up being awesome. I mean, the atmosphere is there, the energy around campus. Also, by the way, like, something that really added to it was, like, you had Tennessee fans try to travel up to, you know, to try to take over, you know, Ohio Stadium. I think that that's great. I think that's great for the sport that people are trying to even organize things like that. So I think that 16 will allow us to have 8 home playoff games, which I think that people are, you know, that top schools, I think, are really going to be excited about. So that's one piece of it. You know, when you start talking about the 5 auto bids and 11 at large, I mean, look, I think that, you know, you mentioned Lane Kiffin has a very outsized voice, I think partially because he's willing to use it. And you look at a lot of the other coaches in the Big Ten and SEC, they really don't say a whole lot. They really don't give away a whole lot. Well, that creates a little bit of a power vacuum that Lane Kiffin can step into. But I think the other piece, too, is, like, if you're an SEC team, you know, I mean, again, it's cool, the idea that, hey, we get 4 guaranteed. And look, especially coming off of a year where you only got 3 teams into the field, which is kind of crazy. Like, yeah, you know, having that baseline, I think, is one thing. But the baseline of 4, I think, is more important to the middle tier and lower tier teams in the Big Ten and SEC. For the top teams, like, I don't think that they're scared to compete. I don't think that Ole Miss is scared to try to be a top 16 team like they were last year. I don't think Alabama, Georgia are scared about trying to be a top 16 team. I think it's more South Carolina. I think it's more Kentucky. I think it's more, you know, some Missouri that would love to try to shoot for the goal of being a top 4 SEC team, more than necessarily trying to be a top 16 team in the country. So I think that even in these rooms, and this is true, I'm sure, in the Big Ten as well, there's some disagreement about how to best approach it, because, again, like, everybody's situation is ultimately so different.
Do you think we'll see, as we get closer to whatever change is coming next, that more coaches will start to be a little bit more outspoken? Like, it has felt like, you know, Sark has done some more interviews this offseason. Even Ryan Day, who is, like, he's a mystery, it seems like, most offseasons, but he started to do more interviews. Do you think we'll see some of these coaches become maybe not quite Lane Kiffin, where they just go on, like, binge rage tweets, it feels like, but they'll at least start to speak more on these things?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I think that go back 5 years and, you know, 2019, 2018, 2020, that time frame, you have these established superstar coaches. Nick Saban, right? He has the right and ability to talk. You know, Dabo Swinney, who still is around, but obviously is not at the peak of his powers anymore. He had the right to talk. We kind of lost that whole generation. I'll even throw Jim Harbaugh into that. We kind of lost like the clear cut top voices in college football in a very short amount of time. We obviously see this too on the basketball side with Coach K, Roy Williams, et cetera, all retiring at a similar time and kind of having this generation change. So I think that that's part of why we've seen some quiet in the past 2 to 3 years is because it's been a transitionary time. And you mentioned some of the voices who are stepping up now. I mean, Kirby Smart has been one who's been a little bit more vocal in recent years. Steve Sarkisian, like you mentioned, kind of moving into that top group. Ryan Day, now a national championship coach, moving into that top group. I think that's going to be part of it, is as some of these younger coaches start to take over the sport, per se, I think that we will start to see more of their voices come to the forefront. I mean, because again, you look around, let's just take the SEC for example right now. I mean, Greg Sankey right now is the most powerful voice in that room. That wasn't the case a couple of years ago. It was Nick Saban. Now, Kirby Smart can elevate himself to being as powerful or more powerful a voice. I think Steve Sarkisian is heading in that direction. Like you mentioned, Lane Kiffin is willing to try to compete, but you know, again, I think that like Brian Kelly isn't necessarily somebody who has the right to be a bigger voice in that room necessarily. And so as some of these coaches have more success, as you have more coaches win national championship like Ryan Day in the Big Ten, I think it does change the dynamics and will allow some of these coaches to be a bit more vocal.
So we will circle back around to the topics at hand of, in terms of what the future looks like and all that sort of stuff. But I do want to ask you about the story that you wrote yesterday. We're talking with Shehan Jeyaraja, CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, covering college football on offensive lines. I think this is fascinating. I'm in the process of reading through all of it, so I haven't gotten quite through all of it yet. But I think the concept is really, really intriguing. What did you learn when kind of compiling the data and talking with people around college football about the depth of the offensive line position across the country?
Well, I think to preface this story is I think that offensive line play and slipping offensive line play has been one of the defining stories of football in the past 5 to 10 years. And furthermore, I think it's one of the hardest stories to try to contextualize, because you can count how many yards a quarterback throws for, or you know, how many times you hand the ball off. It's just harder to quantify and find empirical data on offensive line play, which I think makes it just a more complicated story. And so that was what I really set out to do this offseason, was try to sit down and see if I could figure that out a little bit. And talking to people around the sport, there's a couple pieces of this, right? The biggest one that I got into in my story over at CBSSports.com is I think that the transfer portal and NIL has impacted every position, but it's really impacted offensive linemen in a specific way. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I mean, it's harder to keep as many linemen as you did before. And, you know, you need one or two really good quarterbacks on your roster to be a good team. Well, you need like eight offensive linemen to really even have a chance to have a good line, and probably more than that as well. And so just keeping that amount of players with the relative financial value of these players at this point has just never been more difficult, because you have a kid go through for 1 year and maybe they're getting poached by a team who's willing to pay them just a little bit more. You know, I got a quote from Sam Pittman, who's one of the greatest offensive line coaches of all time, now the coach at Arkansas, who like was like, God dang, man, like I have kids coming into my office who played two games last year and I don't even know if they're good, and they're getting offers from other places for a lot of money. And so I think that's one piece of it, is just, you know, offensive line play is so dependent on development over multiple years, and you just really don't have the luxury of having guys for multiple years anymore and creating these good units consistently. The other piece too, I think, is that, you know, from a literal coaching perspective, like again, you lose the development piece and you also lose the consistency and camaraderie piece. And you know, when you're talking about offensive line play, and again, like when you watch casually on TV, it's you don't always notice all the little details with it, but like offensive line play is all about communication and positioning. And if you don't know where the guy on your left is supposed to be, or if you don't know how to tell the guy on your right that, hey, this guy's coming from this angle, if you can't do that efficiently, then you make mistakes. And with offensive line play specifically, if you make one mistake on the offensive line, it's basically a drive killer. If a wide receiver drops a pass, you know, it's a bad play and you go on and do the next play. If an offensive lineman fails, that's a sack or a tackle for loss. And all of a sudden you're behind the sticks and it changes the entire complexion of the drive. So anyway, all this to say, I think that, you know, this is a defining issue right now in college football. And again, I think that, you know, I got a chance to talk with Miami's offensive line coach, Alex Mirabal, about it. And, you know, Miami has invested as much money, first of all, into their roster as anybody over the past couple of years. But a huge amount of their investment has gone into the offensive line position. They've had very few players relatively transfer. And I think that that's actually one of the reasons they were able to jump from a pretty good team to one that was on the edge of the playoff last year. And I think we'll continue to only rise in 2025.
It's so interesting, one of the points that you made about, you know, like the two games. And how many times do we hear that across every position? But a guy that's played two games, coming into your office, I don't know if he's good, but someone's going to pay him X amount of money. We're like 4 or 5 years into this NIL transfer portal thing, and still no coach seems to like have it fully mastered. It's crazy.
No, it's really, really difficult. And, I mean, the thing is, too, is like, I want people to understand, especially when we look back at this era of, let's say, 21 through 24, like this was the true Wild West. Like this was the true, there are no rules. You can throw any amount of money around. There's no inhibiting on transfers. There's no commitment to binding commitment to being there for a few years. Like, and I mean, God bless the kids who took advantage of it, right? There's more money being thrown around. I would guess at this point it might be the most money that will ever be thrown around in college football, just because, again, there's no rules and a lot of people understand, hey, maybe we can take advantage of this specific moment. But, I mean, look, you look at any other sport, there just isn't a sport that has perpetual free agency. And I don't think that you can have a healthy sport where you have that. Now, you know, look, I'm around the Big 12 conference a lot because of my background in Texas. I think that the Big 12 is a conference that's starting to understand, hey, our advantage is we can use our money to retain our own players. We don't necessarily need to use it to go out and get other players to fill holes, because maybe we don't actually, maybe we won't actually benefit from doing that. And another piece of this as well is that my colleague over at CBS Sports, Chris Hummer, did a study, and you know, obviously it's a number that needs a lot of context, but top 247 kids who transferred top 247 kids who did not transfer were 5 times as likely to be drafted into the NFL as kids who did transfer. Now, again, that's a number that needs a lot of context. And, you know, obviously a kid who's not succeeding is going to transfer more than a kid who's succeeding. But it's also context that, hey, you know what? Maybe it's also bad for players long term to be in this state of perpetual movement as well.
Shayon, I appreciate the time as always, man. Enjoy the rest of the off season before we get things kicked up and rolling in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Shayon Jeyaraj, CBS Sports, covering college football at the national level. You can find him on Twitter at Shayon Jeyaraj. His conversations are always a lot of fun. You know, we've had a lot of conversations surrounding the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness here on this program. Kevin and I feel very similar about it. It is madness. And, you know, getting to be around college coaches and people that are around college programs the way that I am, nobody has gotten this thing down. It feels like you can kind of, if you're a parent, you understand this. Maybe I shouldn't be making this reference because I'm not a parent, but it feels like you're putting out a lot of fires or you're cleaning up a lot of messes that your children make. Like, you understand if you have an infant or a toddler or a two-year-old, three-year-old, four-year-old, whatever, they're going to spill things. Things are going to get thrown across the room. They're going to leave areas of the house a little messy, and it's your job to be the parent to go and clean it up. It feels like that's what college coaches are doing. You understand issues are going to arise, that people are going to come into your office, say, coach, so-and-so is paying me X amount of money. And whether that number is actually true, because I do think that there is a lot of guys across the country that are fabricating numbers in an effort to get money from their current establishment, thinking to themselves that if their current establishment says no, that they might actually be worth that on an open market, which very, very few times has that ever come into fruition. And coaches have talked a lot about this. But with 4 or 5 years into it, nobody has seemed to master the concept of how to behave in name, image, and likeness. And I would think that 4 to 5 years into this is a good amount of data to accumulate. Now, I'll tie that back into the problem at hand elsewhere in the sport. The college football playoff is changing way too rapidly. If we have 4 to 5 years of data surrounding name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, and how coaches can kind of operate in that, we're making drastic changes to the sport and just the overall hierarchy of the sport with a year. We've had like 6 playoff games in the 12-team, or like, what was it? I guess it was 8 if you count the numbers down. We had like 8 playoff games in the 12-team model, and we're already making big adjustments. Now, I think it's fair to suggest that the straight seeding was going to happen eventually, but then some of the other changes that are on the horizon, no auto bids, expanding the postseason, you're making a lot of drastic changes very, very quickly before you actually get to see the ins and outs. 8 games is not enough to get an idea for what the future is going to look like. You need more information. I didn't mind staying at 4 for as long as they stayed at 4 in the college football playoff model, because you knew this is what you're trying out, and then eventually when that contract is done, you will then expand. I thought it would be to 8. They decided to go to 12, but they did that over 8 years. They did it 2 years short. They had a 10-year contract. They did it after 8 years. They did it a little short, but you had like 6, 7, 8 years in this model to say, all right, we like this, we don't like this, here's what we want to change. Now they're making changes incredibly rapidly, and I think you lose a little bit of traction, and it opens you up when you move too fast. Just like anything in life, when you start moving too fast, mistakes are much more prone to be made, and that results in a big, big problem. And eventually, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you are not getting it back in there. We've seen that with name, image, and likeness. I'm fearful that maybe the college football playoff will be the next in line where things are just going to get out of control and there won't be any sort of fixing.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the team at 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too. At the team 980. Pick 6 at 6 will feature Dan Quinn. It will feature Cliff Kingsbury. It will feature Jaden Daniels. Maybe some Tyler Biotish as well coming up a little bit later. Again, we'll talk to Mitch Tischler coming up at 5 o'clock for Not My Beat. Right now, though, had the chance earlier today after Commanders practice to talk with rookie wide receiver Jalen Lane. For those that are watching on YouTube, it's an audio-only interview, so you'll get to see a fancy graphic instead of the actual video. That was just kind of the way the day went. But great chat with Jalen, and here it is here on the Team 980. With Jalen Lane after his first professional days of Phase 3 of OTAs. It's weird because it's like the first day for us, but what's it been like for you being out here the last couple of weeks since you've been drafted, rookie minicamp, and then out here today?
Yeah, it's been real cool. Like, you can tell here in Washington it's a special place, a lot of special people here, and, you know, just a lot of great people to be around, and, you know, I'm excited to get to work with the vets and, you know, all the guys that's here, and it's been a great few weeks.
How different is the speed of the tempo compared to, say, rookie minicamp when the vets are out here?
I mean, I just say, like, there's a lot more communication going on, a lot more, you know, flying around stuff, because, like, everybody's confident. They've been doing it forever. And so you can see that from the defense and, you know, just from an offensive standpoint, it's a lot more communication. So, yeah, it's just that. And, you know, the more you communicate, the faster you can play.
So Clover, South Carolina's very own, the 864. Love to see it. You grew up, obviously, I think a lot of people that followed your story, especially learned about your story after the draft, know your dad was a coach. Yep. How did him, before we ask about the football part of it, how did him being a coach impact, like, how he was as a dad? Yeah. And kind of how you grew up, that whatever coaching stuff, you just look at him or you look back at it and you're like, oh yeah, that was coach coming out.
Nah, facts. Like, I feel like it would have been worse if I played quarterback. But, you know, he tried to keep, you know, family time away from football as much as possible, mainly because my mom didn't want to hear all that at the dinner table. But, you know, there'd be certain times where we just competing regularly. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Coach Lane instead of Pops. So, yeah.
And then what was it like to play for your dad as a player, having him as a coach?
Yeah, while I was playing for him, it was great, you know, just because, you know, he was on me hard. You know, he's pushing me and, you know, he's being harder on me than any of my other teammates just because, you know, he don't want to give the impression that, oh, he's just starting because his dad's the coach. But, you know, he made me earn everything, and I feel like – you know, him being like that on me early on helped me get to where I'm at today.
With Jalen Lane here on the Hoffman Show. So when did, because, like, I'm sure there's that moment where you're trying to figure out, like, okay, am I playing because I'm, that's my dad, or am I pretty good at this? Like, when did you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm a really good football player?
I think it was a 7-on-7, you know, South Carolina, you do 7-on-7s all summer. It was actually at Burns High School. It was the last play. I can't remember who we were playing. Last play of the game, they threw up a jump ball. I mossed like 5 people. And, you know, I'm standing like 5'6" in high school, and I just made a crazy play. Everybody was hyping. That was kind of like the moment. I was like, oh, yeah, like, I'm pretty good at this.
that's nice. So you eventually wind up at Middle Tennessee State. I went to Middle Tennessee State for 2 years because they have a great music engineering program, and that's what I thought I wanted to do until I started doing this.
Yeah.
Why did you go to Middle Tennessee State?
Man, you know, I was kind of under-recruited coming out, and, you know, Middle Tennessee came late, and, you know, Coach Stock was there. He was a really good dude. You know, just loved the way he carried himself, and, you know, what I saw what he was doing with the team, and, you know, I decided to go there.
And then at what point did you know that, okay, there might be more out there for me? I mean, transferring is just a thing that a lot of kids are doing now. It's a totally different world,
yeah.
Whether it's NIL or opportunity, whatever it is. So what was that for you that made them the opportunity first to leave, and then why Virginia Tech?
I'd say, you know, I wanted to be able to prove that I could play, you know, at a higher level. You know, I didn't want that to be a question, me going into, you know, getting drafted and stuff like that. And, you know, I saw the opportunity there with the transfer portal, and, you know, Tech was kind of one of the first teams to hit me up. And, you know, who wouldn't want to play in that atmosphere first off? And, you know, I got a lot of great coaches there, and, you know, it felt like, you know, helped me get where I'm at today. So I feel like it was a great decision.
Yeah, for sure. With Jalen Lane here on the Hoffman Show. By the way, did you see that Metallica performed live down there the other day?
Yeah, like, I was so jealous I didn't get to go, man. They said it caused like a mini earthquake when they played Enter Sandman. So I was like, yeah, that's crazy.
If I had told you like back in high school, hey, you're really going to want to go to a Metallica concert one day, would you have been like, no, I don't?
I would have said, who was Metallica? I'm not going to lie. Yeah. So
what was it like the first time you came out and like you got to experience that live?
Dude, it was like just everything felt like slow motion. I still remember it so vividly. You know, it's just butterflies, chills, all of the above. And, you know, it's something that, you know, you never want to take for granted. Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, since you've been here, you can tell it's a special place. What are some of those early, you know, stories, early impressions, early things that stand out of why you felt that way and why you feel that way?
I mean, I think in the locker room, you get the vibes of a college locker room. You know, like in college, you know, you're around the guys all the time. You're probably living with some of them, things like that. But like here, I really didn't know what to expect. But, you know, you got dudes joking around. They got a hoop in there. And, you know, it just feels like a real brotherhood. And, you know, I think that stands out to me.
You walk around this locker room, so looking over your shoulder, and Bobby Wagner's here. Yeah. Like, he's going to have a gold jacket one day, which is neat. What was it like to all of a sudden you walk in, though, and, you know, you're probably watching Jaden last year do what he's doing on TV. You see a guy like Bobby Wagner. We all watched Bobby growing up. So what's it like to see that guy 3D in the flesh? And, you know, how do you treat those early interactions?
I think it's very surreal, one, because obviously you see him on TV and you know what they've done and where they're, you know, going to end up in the Hall of Fame, but also just how down to earth everybody is. You know, I meet Bobby for the first time coming in, you know, adapting up, talking to me like, I'm like, dang, this is Bobby Wagner. But, you know, and then, like, same with Zach Ertz, Terry, everybody, you know, everybody's like that. And, you know, I think it just speaks to, you know, what the coaches and the higher-ups here are trying to do and just the kind of brotherhood and bond we got.
Last thing for you. Obviously, you and Debo, similar roles, skill sets, whatever in this offense, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah.
But what have you been able to pick up from him so far, and, you know, how much are you kind of watching him to say, okay, let me see how he goes about his business. Let me see how he does these things specifically to know that you can better your game.
Yeah, you know, Debo, he's from South Carolina too, so we kind of got like a little connection there. And but, you know, he's just, you know, how he carries himself. He's, you know, born to be a leader, and he's just, you know, very, you know, what's the word, technical and very attention to detail. I can't attention detail or
yeah,
detail orient. That's what I'm looking for. And, you know, you can see that in the way he practices and the way he does routes on air, whatever the case may be. So him, Noah Brown, Terry, you know, all great guys to, you know, for me to come in and watch and learn from.
Jalen Lane with us here on the Hoffman Show. Jalen, welcome to D.C. and good luck.
Appreciate you.
That's my chat with Jalen Lane from earlier today at OTAs. I also chatted with Mitch Tischler earlier today at OTAs. During practice, we were chatting. And then as we were leaving, I said, hey, do you want to come out at 5 o'clock? He said, yes, it's almost 5 o'clock. Time for Not My Beat. Mitch Tischler joins us next on The Hoffman Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.